Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
Dreams can be a seething world of chaos, or your own personal amusement park. That is, if you master the art of lucid dreaming. Stephen LaBerge pioneered the field of lucid dreaming research at Stanford, and he's the author of the book Lucid Dreaming, A Concise Guide to Awakening in Your Dreams and in Your Life. LaBerge told Steve Paulson what lucid dreaming is.
Lucid dreaming simply is dreaming while knowing that you are dreaming. Well, that sounds like something, well, don't you do that all the time? Well, only when you wake up and say, oh, that was a dream. So we don't usually tell ourselves, well, it's happening. This is a dream. If we do, we then know what sort of circumstance we're in, and it gives us new opportunities for dream control, etc. I think lucid dreaming would be better called cognizant dreaming. Cognizant means doing whatever it is you're doing and knowing that you're doing it.
So you are both dreaming and you're aware that you're dreaming.
Exactly. You are vividly dreaming. You are completely in the dream world, yet you know, as you might know a fact, that you are asleep in bed at the time, and therefore that everything that's happening is in your own mind.
But how do you know you're really asleep, that you're not just lying awake thinking that you're dreaming?
That is really a kind of a technical question about how do we know that this is sleep? Experientially, that's what it's like. For example, if I were having a lucid dream now, I might say, oh, well, here I am, what I thought was a studio a moment ago, but now I'm floating up to the ceiling, and that means this is a dream. So now I remember, well, I must be asleep in bed. That's right, I'm sleeping in the lab, and we've got electrodes on me, so I'm going to now make a signal to the lab to say, yes, I know I'm dreaming. And I do that just by looking to the left and the right and the left and the right. And then on the computer screen, we will see eye movement corresponding to that left, right, and in the context of rapid eye movement sleep. And they say, ah, this guy is showing rapid eye movement or REM or paradoxical sleep. There's no question that he's asleep. And his experience says he's fully in that dream world. So given that we have the consistency between the subjective experience, what I experience in the dream being fully there, I don't feel myself in bed. I'm not aware of the surroundings, but I'm aware of the dream world I'm in, plus the physiology as measured by EEG, brain waves, and so on, that determine it is the state of REM sleep. It's a very curious, amazing situation, but true.
When did you first realize that you could be a lucid dreamer yourself?
Well, when I was 5 years old, I used to have a series of interesting serial underwater sea pirate dreams. I had gone to Saturday matinees, and they had, you know, the serials that would continue on night after night. And after having a fabulous underwater adventure dream one night, I thought, well, why couldn't I go back to that same dream tonight and continue just as the serial movies do? And what do you know? That next night, there I was. And all I had to do is simply think, I want to go back to that dream tonight. And so I went through that for months, actually, of these undersea adventure dreams.
Now, I know you have been studying lucid dreaming for years now, and I'm sure you've worked with many people. Are there common kinds of lucid dreams that people have?
Of course, the dreams of one person or the other will vary tremendously, but I think there's a common theme through many of them. You can just imagine it for yourself. You realize you're dreaming, okay? So what do you want to do now? So right now, it's all in your mind. You could do anything. For example, you've heard about flying. So you're going to want to say, okay, let's see, can I do it? And you step into the air and you float. And then you go floating out the window and you look around you and say, what's this? Where am I? Wow, look, this looks so real, but it's a different place or something. What is this? And you start exploring it. And so I'd say, essentially, exploration and adventure is probably the main theme of lucid dreams, where people are just fascinated with being in this world that clearly is somehow a construction of their own minds, yet it's so complex that it's, you know, at least as complex as the waking perceptual world.
There is sort of an obvious question that comes from this, is I'm guessing that if lucid dreaming is sort of an area where your fantasies can play out because you have control over this, I mean, do people want to have sex in lucid dreaming? And then is there a real physiological response there?
Well, I don't know. Would you? Well, of course they do. That, in fact, is one of the most popular themes. I'd say it's right there next to flying. Flying and dream sex. After all, dream sex is the only safe sex these days anyway. But we indeed have done experiments in which we measured the physiology associated with orgasm in lucid dreams and found it to be exactly the same as one gets with the waking state. The experiences can be extremely vivid. In fact, if you look at the writings of Patricia Garfield, such as Pathway to Ecstasy and Creative Dreaming, you'll see she describes orgasmic experiences in lucid dreams that go far beyond her waking state. And she thinks that lucid dreaming is essentially orgasmic because it happens so frequently with her and her students. But I think it depends on the person, what you're interested in. We do know that in REM sleep or paradoxical sleep, we have an activated brain that also is associated with sexual activation, that males have erections and females have equivalent sexual activation. It seems like there's probably an evolutionary function to that that prepares for having sex and procreation.
So what you're saying here is that you can learn how to do all of this. I mean, whatever kind of lucid dream you want. How do you go about becoming a good lucid dreamer?
Well, lucid dreaming is learnable. And if you think about, for example, language, that we speak a complex language, very difficult. But how do we learn that? Well, we were taught. Our parents and the people around us spoke the language and they taught us to speak. Nobody teaches us to dream. So it's not surprising that people haven't developed the skill. But the basic method is to enhance your awareness of your dreaming in general. The first step is to increase dream recall. Because if you don't remember your dreams very often when you're awake, you don't have much of an idea of what they are. But if you remember them every night, for example, and for really good dream recallers, including myself, that would be typically three or four times a night. Every REM period of the night, you can wake up from the dream and remember it. If you can do that, then you can start to think about, oh, what is dream like about that dream? You know, what's different from the waking state? Namely, various oddities and inconsistencies because there's no external structure to keep it stabilized. And so from that, you can then say, all right, tonight when I'm dreaming, I want to remember to notice that I'm dreaming. I want to recognize I'm dreaming. So it's a prospective memory or memory for intentions.
Can you tell me about either one of your dreams or the dream of someone you've worked with that has been truly transformative?
Yes. A good example is a dream I had in which for the first maybe 40 or 50 lucid dreams I had were typically some kind of nightmare, realizing I'm dreaming, and then I'd fly away from whatever the problem is, you know, the angry mob, the police, the underworld, whatever. And on about the 40th lucid dream, I have a dream in which I'm doing the same thing, running away from some unpleasant situation, and then I believe I wake up. And at this point, I find myself in an audience listening to Idris Shah, a teacher I respected a great deal, talking about Stephen's dream. And he said, oh, it was excellent that Stephen realized that he was dreaming and therefore he could fly, but too bad that he didn't realize that because it was a dream, there was nothing to flee. Now, that was so clear. In other words, the fact that I've been running away from, in the same way as people wake up from a nightmare, instead I was flying away. So I wanted to get away, so I was getting away better. So I applied that idea in the following dream, after working at this for actually some months, in which I find myself in the midst of a riot in the classroom. And here, everybody is throwing chairs around and beating on everybody else. And in the middle of that, I'm in the grip of a 10-foot-tall ogre, you know, really. And I said, this is a shadow figure if I've ever seen one. And I come to in the dream. I realize this is a dream because I've never met an ogre before. And I resolve that I'm going to befriend him because that's the way out of the conflict dreams. And so I look at him with the intention of saying something nice, and I feel overwhelmed with revulsion and disgust. Oh, this is, geez, just too ugly and barbaric. So I try another approach. I say, that's not going to work. So I first get in touch with love. I remember, what is compassion? I feel it. Then I look him in the eyes, and words of loving acceptance flow out of me intuitively, just directly. He then embraces me. He melts into my heart, and I wake up feeling wonderfully together. And so that dream was, first of all, an experience of integration, of first starting with a conflict, of a separation where there's another part of myself that I'm fighting with, that ogre. You know, it's the part of my humanity that I don't want to accept. And by the end of the dream, I have become one with it. I've accepted it. It has, harmony now has appeared, which is exactly what I want to achieve with lucid dreaming, which is to accept what I find myself to be.
Do you think lucid dreaming really matters in our lives? I mean, obviously, it can be kind of thrilling or exciting to have one of these dreams, but when we're back to our waking selves, will we somehow benefit from having these lucid dreams?
And many people describe having had one or two lucid dreams that were the most important, valuable, and meaningful experiences of their entire lives. Not, you know, just, boy, that was a lot of fun. And the Tibetan Buddhists have been practicing a yoga of the dream state for over 1,000 years, where they use lucid dreaming as a means of spiritual progress. And to them, there's nothing more important in the world than the idea of developing wisdom and compassion through a integrative process using one's dreams, becoming conscious of them, first of all, learning to control them, and then learning to recognize that it is all a dream, waking or dreaming alike.
Hey, la, dee, ding, dong, a lang, a lang, a lang, boom, ba, lo, ba, do, ba, do, ba, day. Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above. If you would tell me I'm the only one that you love. Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and hoping we'll meet again.
Stephen LaBerge pioneered the field of lucid dreaming research at Stanford University. He's the founder of the Lucidity Institute and the author of the book, Lucid Dreaming. Steve Paulson spoke with him.